Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Motor Mouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we're joined by a multiple race winner in both petrol and electric powered cars. He's raced at Le Mans and currently competes in Formula E, where he joins a new team for season 7, Mahindra Racing. Yes, Alexander Sims is our guest this week, and the all important question will be, can he beat his boss, Dilbag Gill, in the hardest quiz in motorsport? Well, you'll have to listen to find out. I was actually ill for this episode, just a cold, but I was replaced. I'll be back, don't you worry though. In the meantime, I'll let Tim tell you who had the honour of filling in.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Motormouth podcast. Before we introduce today's guest, I need to head not to Essex this week, as my usual co-host Harry is laid up in bed with an illness, so we wish him well. However, what this means is that I need to head to Leicestershire, to our guest host, and come up with some new facts. And I don't like to disappoint, so it might interest you to know that Leicester is the first city to have a local radio station. The first broadcast from BBC Radio Leicester was back in 1967. It included the first local radio jingle, followed by the Lord Mayor of Leicester as a guest. But that is not what's important about Leicestershire today. No, it's the home of the person jumping into Harry's ample shoes. Welcome to my special guest co-host, racing driver, trans and LGBTQ plus pioneer, all-round good egg and former podcast guest, Charlie Martin. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for such a warm welcome onto the show. It's great to be stepping in for Harry this evening and yeah, filling his ample shoes, as you say. I hope he's doing okay at the moment.
On the other side of the microphone as well. So is this a new experience for you? Have you done this sort of thing before?
I've not. No, I'm flying by the seat of my pants.
Perfect.
Right now.
Perfect.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we're all about that. And you've just got back from quite an important race where you did rather well, a race where our guest also took part. How was your experience over there in the wet?
It was pretty hair-raising at times, I'll be honest. I had a fantastic, time, really. Competing in the Nürburgring 24 hours is definitely the highlight of my career so far. And as the race goes, I mean, it was very, very wet, but I feel like we had the diet version, perhaps, of the Nürburgring, because it was we lost nearly 8 hours driving due to a red flag over the evening session. So I actually got to go back to my bed and have 5 hours sleep.
Which, winning,
I understand, is not the normal thing for a 24-hour race.
No, that's not the done thing at all, is it? And you very nearly got yourself on the podium.
Very nearly, one step away. We came fourth, which was a fantastic result for my first ever 24-hour race. I was absolutely thrilled.
It's a valiant
effort. Scratch on the car either. So, yeah, that's quite a result after quite a lot of sideways moments. I can tell you that definitely.
Very good.
I think I felt more like a rally driver going around the Nordschleife these last few days.
Now, listen, shall I introduce today's guest?
I think you should.
So this is the fifth time we've had a Formula E driver on the show, and add to that the Formula E presenters. We're slowly working our way through the entire grid and broadcast team. However, that doesn't take away from our excitement of having Alexander Sims on the podcast today. He's a former McLaren Autosport BRDC Young Driver of the Year. He's raced in Formula 3, GP3, LMP2, GTs all over the world before finding himself in Formula E. And he's about to take up a seat with Mahindra for Season 7. The man's a serial winner and even a world record holder, having driven from John O'Groats to Land's End in an electric car with the shortest charging time, making him our first official record breaker. Remarkable. We're delighted to have him here, Alexander Sims. Welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you for having me. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Alex. How are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, all very good, thank you. All good. Yeah, like you, actually relatively fresh considering it's just come back from 24-hour race at Nürburgring. But yeah, all good. All very, very good.
Where are you joining us from today? Are you back from the Nürburgring or are you still over in Germany?
Yeah, no, I'm back home now and just put the kids to bed. So, back to normal, basically.
Doing the dad stuff.
I live just south of Birmingham, near Ulster, out in the countryside. So,
how many kids have you got?
Got three boys.
Oh, my word. So I've got two boys and one relatively new girl, and the two boys are complete chaos. So I don't envy you having three. Is your house a complete madhouse?
It's pretty mental, yeah, as you would expect. Yeah, they're five, three, and one. Wow. So all pretty young and lovely, but have their challenges as well, yes.
I feel your pain completely. Now, listen, take us back to the start. Where did you get the racing bug from? When did it show itself for the first time?
Well, it's a bit of a strange one, actually, because I never really had a racing bug. You know, I never had a massive desire to go racing, to be quite honest, as a young boy. When I was 10, I think I tried out karting for the first time. Because my brother had done some cadet karting and then decided he wanted to go off to boarding school. So then it was my turn and yeah, it was all right. It was good fun. But to be honest, nothing much more than that. I just, you know, was a bit of an airhead I still am an airhead, but you know, I was definitely an airhead when I was young and it was just like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Bouncing around the track and having a laugh. But it took a bit of time to snowball into something more and more serious. And that's, yeah, I guess when I was sort of 14, 15 years old, that's when it started to hit home that, you know, that this could be
a career.
A career as such, if I was able to continue working hard.
10 years old is relatively old for someone to start karting. Compared to a lot of the people that we've had on the show, some of them, I can't remember who we had recently, who was six when they got in their first go-kart. Mm-hmm. Presumably you can, you have some sort of recollection or memory of those days when you were sort of 10, 11 years old, jumping into a kart. Did you feel back then, even though it wasn't necessarily something you thought you would pursue, did you think I know I'm quick at this straight away, or was there a bit of a lead up time before you realized that you were actually quite good at it?
Definitely wasn't immediate. I do remember being asked by my dad on the way back from Wigan kart track, like, seriously, Alexander, do you actually enjoy doing this? Because we, I don't know, come third from last in the B final or something in my first year. And it's funny, I look back on that. That's the moment that sticks out anyway, that I didn't even love it, I would say. I quite enjoyed it. And me being a, 10, 11-year-old kid, I was like, yeah, it's all right. I'm happy to keep going, Dad, you know. Looking back, actually, I probably made quite a clear decision as to pursuing it for another year. And then the following year, things did start to go quite well. It could have been over before it pretty much started.
Would you say there was a particular moment or something that happened that really made you think, actually, wow, yeah, you know, this is something that I've got to pursue? Or was it just more of a gradual thing?
It was certainly in my karting days, it was just a gradual thing, to be honest. There were two standout moments, but they happened later on in my career as such. One was breaking my arm. I had a fairly serious arm break when skiing, and I was out of racing for about 9 months. And that really hit home. Once I could go back and I did karting, so I was 17 when I broke my arm, and racing at like in the World Championships and European Championships in karting. And then when I could actually get back to it, it made me think, I'm getting a second chance here. You know, it was a serious injury.
Almost like that thing of, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder when you suddenly can't do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Getting back into the kart must have been an amazing feeling.
It was. And it was just around the time when, you know, 17, 18, you want to start spending more time with your friends, go to bars and clubs and start, you know, being a bit of a, do the standard crazy thing. It just happened kind of at the right time for me to actually rein myself in and focus. The other fairly pivotal moment was winning the McLaren Autosport Young Driver Award.
Fairly life-changing experience for some. At that point, when you're sort of 17, 18 years old, like you say, people are starting to go off to bars and restaurants and clubbing and, you know, doing all the things that people do at that sort of age. Did you do that as well, or did you make a sort of conscious decision to knuckle down, forget all that, and just focus on racing?
Well, I did do it a bit, yes. Inevitably, you know, when you've got weekends off and you're in the summer holidays after sixth form's finished, you know, all your mates are going out every day, basically, but, you know, certainly on a few occasions I'd go out and have a blast and a lot of fun with them. But, it would ebb and flow, you know, depending on my racing commitments. But there was always a very clear difference in my mind between the times when I was free and it wasn't even close to a race weekend. And, yes, I could let myself go and go crazy and do all the sort of normal drinking and dancing and all that stuff. But then it was, very, very clear to me that when you're getting close to a race weekend, then that was of absolute importance, and I would never let anything get in the way.
Yeah, you had that separation. Well, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, you've just come back from the same event as Charlie. Alex won it. I know you nearly got a podium, but Alex won it. So did you, after the race, were you too knackered to go out and let your hair down a little bit, or was there time and energy left to go and have a few beers?
On this occasion, actually, there was, because like Charlie, I got 6 hours sleep even, I think, which was... it's totally unheard of in my experience of 24-hour races anyway. Come Sunday evening, once we'd won, we did get back to the bar and stayed up till 1 or 2 in the morning or something, having a good few drinks with the team. It's a massive race for the team as well, to be honest. Rover, they have sponsored events around the Nordschleife for many years, and they've raced there, I think, for 8 or 9 years now. So to finally get a win was huge for them as well. So we had a meal with 60-odd people on separate tables, but all celebrating together.
Where did you go out for dinner?
Oh, at the Lidner. So it's just the hotel at the track. But there was basically just us there anyway. So it was nice. It was nice.
Did you manage to go out, Charlie, and paint the town red?
I didn't paint the town red completely, but yeah, I did go out with the last few races. I've shared an apartment with one of my teammates, and he's great fun. So we met up with a crew chief and his wife, and the four of us had a nice meal and quite a few drinks. And my crew chief said normally he's so shattered at that point in the evening that his head is literally pretty much in his dinner.
Yeah.
Someone trying to prod him to stay awake, and he said, "Yeah, I've never ever done a 24-hour race and felt so alert at the end of it."
Yeah, so bit of a reprieve. Now, listen, Alex, the dream when you were going through the junior categories, presumably at that stage, the dream was Formula One, as Formula E was, I suppose, yet to show itself. What was the plan once you realised this was your career? What was the end game?
When I was in junior single seaters, certainly Formula One was the aim. A certain Valtteri Bottas put end to that dream, being my teammate and just showing me that I actually wasn't good enough in Formula 3 and then in GP3. That's close, but yeah, he was better, hands down. So fair play to him. And I'm just glad that he's gone on to be pretty good, because
makes you
that's
feel
at
better.
Least given me some consolation. But things, I guess, changed really in terms of my ambitions. Once you realize that you can't achieve your goal as such, you reassess the situation. And then it was, I went through a very standard procedure that single seater drivers go through, where you're very naive and sort of blasé to the wider world of motorsports, you know, when you're doing the Formula Renault, Formula 3, yeah, Formula 2 journey. And I just wasn't aware of how vast motorsport was, you know, in all sorts of different other categories. So then I opened my eyes to sort of endurance racing and tried out, LMP2, and did some GTs with the McLaren, where I'd got some contacts from winning the award previously. Started off an awesome journey, to be honest. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it and couldn't really have asked for much more in terms of actually falling in love with motorsport again, because when I was in junior single seaters, it was all about ultimate performance. And, you know, if I dropped half a tenth on the lap time, I'd be disappointed and, you know, unhappy with myself and just couldn't get too much enjoyment from it. Whereas now, going through endurance racing, being with other drivers in a car, sharing a car, that's proper camaraderie. You know, you're working for a manufacturer, for a brand, where there's, you know, 100, 200 people in the entire organization working for the same thing. And it's a phenomenal feeling. So, very, very pleased with how it's gone. And, Formula E became my ultimate goal when I heard it was announced as a championship, whatever it would have been, 7 years ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, a few years before that, I'd actually started to get interested in electric cars myself on the road, and had been driving an electric car for a few years.
Is that because of sustainability reasons, or did you just prefer that kind of feeling while you were driving? Or, you know, when Formula E came along, did you think this is perfect? This is, and it's something that's interesting to me because of the right reasons?
Yes, I mean, I became interested in electric cars, through my general interest in sustainability. It started off with just renewable energy. I just saw the simplicity of solar panels, and I was just like, well, it's so simple. Like, why isn't it more mainstream? You know, just have a simple panel there and you get electricity. You don't have to burn anything. You don't have to do anything that involves extracting stuff from the ground or anything. But then got interested in transportation and got fed up of filling my car up with petrol. And one of those things, you know, one thing led to another over a few years and then got an electric car. But all the time, and to be fair, even, you know, just this weekend gone, you know, I'm driving a petrol-powered race car. And so it's not like it's there's a sudden switch where you can just go from not doing one thing to only the next, you know, with electric cars. But we're in a transition process, and as soon as I was interested in electric cars and Formula E came about, then obviously that's a clear way to pair my passions of sustainability and motorsport in one. And it seemed like there may have been a chance in season 1, season 2 of Formula E with different teams, but then nothing came about. And honestly, I thought the single seater sort of dream or path was finished. You know, I was getting older and older and getting more and more ingrained in GT racing. And then a little bit out of the blue, actually, it was slightly bizarre timing because I'd just done Le Mans 24 hours with BMW. I actually shunted. So I thought like I was in the doghouse, but then a week and a half later, I got a call saying, actually, we'd like you to do Formula E. So that was a pretty nice phone call to get. To actually make that dream a reality. And yeah, here I am now going into my third season. It's crazy.
I really wanted to ask you, actually, because in a strange way, I've been driving your Formula E car in the virtual world this summer.
I did see Charlie, yes.
Racing in the ABB Formula E Race at Home Challenge. And it was, you know, a really, really interesting experience for me. I mean, just on the one level, competing with pro sim racers, but also getting my first virtual taste of what it's like to drive a Formula E car. What, I mean, it's something I'd love to try in the real world, but I mean, what's your experience been like? What would you say are some of the biggest challenges of driving a Formula E car compared to, say, a conventional single-seater with a petrol engine?
Yeah, Formula E is tough. It's really tough. And I mean, I struggled in the Race at Home Challenge as well. So I would not like to give any advice in terms of driving the simulator side of things. But in terms of the real car, something that
how did you find always, it compared to the real car? Did you find there was quite a similarity, or was it...
There were some similarities, yes, I would say, but I don't know. I just massively struggle in simulators because there's no movement. You can't actually feel what the car's doing. You're relying purely on steering torque and seeing what the car's doing as such. And I'm terrible with understeer in the real car. And in a simulator, I think it seems like you've got to overwork the front tire to keep the front tire working the whole way through the corner. Whereas in the real world, you know, the front can be slightly under the limit if you've got a strong front and you can be balancing the rear tire on the limit. But I just couldn't do that. And so I wasn't particularly good, but I guess the one similarity was that in Formula E, compared to most other race cars, there's quite a tendency to have a reasonably long rolling phase of the corner where you're not braking and not putting the throttle on. And that did seem to transfer a bit over onto the simulator. But that's just like one of the things in Formula E where you actually start to think about your driving from an efficiency point of view, not just from pure lap time, which I had done, you know, my entire career. You know, you never really think about how can I drive more efficiently and use less energy during the lap. You just drive how you drive, right? Uh-huh. And if you gain half a tenth, you gain half a tenth, whether you use up 0.2 litres more over a lap or less, no one really minds. Even in endurance racing, to be honest, you know, if you're faster, you're faster, and they'll take the lap time every time. But in the end, actually, I would say with Formula E, it's a bit strange in that the fact that it's electric is probably not the biggest difference between Formula E and other racing series. The fact that it's electric does follow on to other things, but like the energy side of the race, you could do that in a conventional car by just massively restricting the fuel allowed. You know, you could say, for a Formula 3 race, right, you're actually only allowed to use 7 litres of fuel, where a flat-out race would need 15, say, and then suddenly some of this sort of energy-saving philosophy would come in. So the way the rules are created has a massive impact on the racing itself, but I'd say the biggest difference is the tyre. Between Formula E and other racing series. You know, the treaded tyre that we have, because it's all weather, it's a tyre that's designed to work in both the wet and the dry. And Michelin have done a pretty good job of designing it because it's very good in the dry and still pretty good in the wet as well. But it's got a very low operating temperature, And so that's why in qualifying, you see people crawling around in hot races on the outlap and barely stressing the tire, because you just don't want to put any energy into it. Because on 250 kilowatts over one lap, you overwork the rear tire.
Yeah, I mean,
if you go from nothing.
In the sim, it's just so much torque, isn't it? You just light the back of the car up like nothing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's really the biggest thing, because in the end, it's the same as every racing series, and as in the tire is the only thing that connects you to the ground. And so you've got to get the tire working as best as possible. And when it's got such unique characteristics that we have in Formula E, it's very difficult to sort of make sure you're optimizing it all of the time. So I'd say, yeah, understanding the tire is still our biggest challenge.
How much of the race are you actually going at it, you know, hardcore? Like, it'd be amazing to see a race series one day where the driver's just allowed to go flat out for the entire race. Obviously, in Formula One, you have to manage tires and various other things. Formula E, like you say, you have to almost coast at some points to manage your energy. How much of it is about that? And can you really go hell for leather at points and just go nuts and just pour all that energy down onto the track? Or is it a case of you really got to manage that energy throughout the entire race?
Well, in the race, yeah, you've got to manage the energy a lot in Formula E. But I definitely like to stress that the fact that we're managing energy a lot, coasting for long periods and regenning a lot, it's not a negative. I mean, I totally understand that maybe it sounds like, you know, you're not using up the full potential of the car, of the motor, you know, not reaching as high top speeds as you could. But last season, now that season six is finished, it's two seasons ago, I guess, but in season five, when we had different rules where under full course yellow and safety car, you didn't get an energy reduction, what would happen was that because your slow laps behind safety car are so efficient and you use such a small amount of energy, the remaining laps would be close to, if not completely flat out. And then it just neutralizes everything, and there's no strategy in the race anymore, and it's just follow the leader. And it became boring. So I really see with Formula E the fact that you have to manage your energy is a real positive. It creates so much racing potential. So many people can decide what to do with their energy, when to use it, to try and be aggressive at the start and overtake people, knowing that they're going to be at an energy deficit later on, have to defend. You know, it's really fascinating. So, it's one of those, actually, when we go to some of the tracks which are tighter and have shorter straights and we're not doing as much energy saving, it almost feels a bit of a cop out and a bit rubbish. You know, we want the long open straights where you have to save a lot, like Berlin, like Marrakesh, like these Mexico City, because it just creates awesome racing.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting perspective, some really nice insight. Now, you mentioned Berlin there. Berlin, pretty crazy, 6 races in 9 days for the end of season 6. What was it like being a driver during that period? It must have been quite a unique set of scenarios for you to suddenly find yourself in so many races in quick succession. Were you completely exhausted?
I mean, the biggest problem for me was that I was just uncompetitive in Berlin for some reason. So then I was rather disappointed that we had 6 races in a row because we didn't have enough time to sort out our problems. But it was a very strange environment, I've got to be honest. All of us arrived early, had our COVID tests, and then had to stay within the confines of the hotel or racetrack the whole time, which for a few days is okay. But, you know, after 10, 12 days, when you include the days beforehand and the days in between races, it starts to be kind of claustrophobic, I guess.
What kind of things did you do to take your mind off the boredom? Did you end up doing any kind of strange little tricks?
To be honest, we didn't have a huge amount of spare time. It was really just that the first 2 days when we arrived, and then had to just stay in our hotel room for whatever it was, 30 odd hours, to get the results of the tests to make sure that we were all negative. That was the strangest. But beyond that, we were, you know, at least we could go to the track and do our work. And so even on the days off, I'd go to the track, and we had a lot to try and work through and change to turn around our performance. So I was very busy with that. But the worst thing actually was we had to pre-order our food before the 2 weeks. And it seemed simplest for me at the time to just say, oh, I'll have the same thing for lunch and dinner.
That's a terrible error.
Well, after 12 days of eating two meals the same for lunch and dinner every day, it was disgusting. You know, what was a very nice meal on the first day turned into being an atrocious meal. I was just having to put food in my mouth and swig some water and gulp it down. And
can I ask what meal you chose?
I can remember pretty well. It was,
you're not going to forget, are you?
There was broccoli, chickpeas, tuna, salad, and something else.
He's blocked it out of his mind.
But I just remember it starting to become utterly grotesque.
Seen enough tuna to last your lifetime. Now listen, after two seasons with BMW I Andretti, I think I've said that correctly, you've moved across to season 7 to Mahindra. How did that all come about? What were the conversations that were had? And an exciting move for you.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I've been with BMW for, I think, 6 or 7 years now. So, it certainly took me a little bit of time to make sure I'm making the right decision. But it all happened pretty much during lockdown. We had started discussions in Marrakesh at the Formula E race there. And then, with quite a lot of time in lockdown, it was a good time, to be honest, to be able to reflect on things and consider the offers. In the end, having spoken to Dilbag and seen where Mahindra sees himself moving in the future, it felt the right time for a change and a new situation. I haven't got a single bad word to say about BMW. It wasn't about anything to do with any of the working relationships I've got with the guys. I have really full respect for everyone at BMW, and really appreciate all the opportunities that they've given me over the years. But just one of those timings were what they were, and it seemed like a good opportunity to take a different course.
Do you think it's too early to put down any expectations for season 7? I know it's very new in terms of the relationship with Mahindra. What are you hoping for season 7?
It is too early, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I've driven the car once last week, just before going to Nürburgring. And I've done a couple of simulator sessions and that's about it. So to be honest, at the moment, I'm still finding my feet with the team and the systems and things. But I think everyone at Mahindra would be the first to admit that season 6 really didn't go as well as they'd hoped. They had some technical issues in the first few races where they then had to end up going back to their season 5 powertrain. And so I don't think that was a very representative set of results that they've got. I think we've got a lot more expectation and hope that things can go better in season 7. But in terms of, thinking about any hard, clear results, it's so difficult to know in Formula E. It's such an up and down championship with the way that qualifying format works. You know, you can do well to start with, and then the qualifying format makes it more and more difficult to continue doing well, basically. Everyone except for Antonio did struggle in season 6. You know, fair play to Antonio for being head and shoulders above the rest. But I would hope that we'll have some races where we can be right up there And beyond that, I don't know a huge amount.
What would you say is your favourite fixture in the Formula E calendar? Where's your favourite track and why?
I would probably say, I mean, I guess there's two aspects in terms of the actual track itself, and then the environment where the track is based, because, you know, Formula E, we go to some amazing places. You know, I never imagined I'd be racing on the streets of Hong Kong or in Santiago, in Chile, or, you know, well, we were going to race in London, you know, all these places. You know, you're so used to racing at conventional race circuits that are outside of cities, not a huge amount around the racetrack. And so I would probably say the most special place to race was actually in Hong Kong. I like Hong Kong as a city a lot, and I've got a few friends there from school. So yeah, that was very special to race there. But then as an actual track itself, I think probably Marrakesh, actually, I really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I think that fits really well with Formula E in terms of the amount of energy saving you have to do in the race. And it creates some really interesting races. So,
what's your favourite track, Charlie?
Well, I'm trying to think where we drove. I mean, the Monaco E Prix was quite good fun. But we drove Hong Kong, actually. Was out of the ones that we drove in the race home challenge, I think Hong Kong was really good. It had some good, had a good flow to it. I think coming from a non-Formula E circuit type background, I found it quite difficult on some of the courses where they're really, you know, they're so tight, the corners, mm-hmm. when you're having to drop down to first gear in the sim at least, it's so easy to just get a big drift coming out of a corner. And I found in the Hong Kong track, you could just get into a good rhythm. And it was, I had some of my best results there. But I'm not so familiar with all of the tracks. So like, as you said, I mean, you get to go to so many amazing cities and race there. It must just be quite a fun championship to race in, I'm sure.
Now, listen, this is that may well be the case, and I'm sure Hong Kong was fun, but there is a bigger highlight of your career to come, and that is the world-famous Motormouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport. Alexander Sims, welcome to Motormouths. As I say, the hardest quiz in motorsport, because no one really knows the answers. There's a very competitive leaderboard. Charlie here, our esteemed co-host for the day, is in 33rd place. So I feel confident you'll beat Charlie. Some of your Formula E colleagues are on there with Nick Cassidy, the new EVR driver, in 21st. Sebastian Buemi, 19th. Ollie Rowland, we have in 18th. Edo Matara is 15th. Brendan Hartley is 4th on the leaderboard. But right at the top, you'll be interested to hear, is your new boss, Dilbag Gill, is top of the leaderboard on an incredible 14 points. Alexander Sims, are you ready to play Motormouths?
Yes.
Right.
I am.
Now, listen, I've given you a gimme for the first question. If you get this wrong, I'm ending the podcast now and we're all going home. The first question is a radio transcript. It was not a transcript, it's radio. All I need to know from you is where it was, what's the context, and what year was it? And you won't get this wrong.
Oh,
I'm easing you in gently. Are you ready? Here it comes.
Okay, Alex, Quali Beach. Remember, brake integral and pick up proper. Magnificent drive. You know, Formula E race winner, mate.
You can't get that wrong.
Oh, God, when was that? There have been so many wins. Yeah, no, I think that was Diria.
Yeah,
well, round two of season six.
Correct. Yes.
My one and only win. Yes.
I thought you'd remember that one. Well done. That is 3 points, you'll be pleased to hear. So you are off and running.
Brilliant.
Charlie, I'm going to hand over to you for question number two.
So question number two, you have a seat with Mahindra for season seven, but how many points did the team finish season six with? And I need this, the nearest five.
Mm. we've just ramped it up massively. With
gosh, I would say...
Come on.
24.
Oh, my God. Oh, you're miles away.
You've massively
undersold your new team there. Do you want to have another? I'll give you another stab at it. You can have within 10 points, and I will give you the points. If you get within 10.
I don't know. I can't think of all the results that they got.
Always struggling. Dilbag, are you listening?
Don't listen. 48.
49.
Okay.
Good answer.
Oh, sorry, I was thinking per driver. That's what happened, 24 per driver.
Well,
in that case,
you get full points. Question number three, and I'll take to the nearest, what do you reckon?
Cool, help me out.
10,000? I think that's fair. Maybe 15. I'll see how generous I'm feeling. Harry's always super generous with this, so I'll see.
You've been very kind to.
So how many employees... does your new employer, Mahindra, have across the business? And I'm not talking just the race team here. I'm talking the entire group.
Oh, my God.
I reckon... I'll give you a clue, actually. No, I won't.
250,000.
Oh, you're Jay.
Did you know that?
Did you just Google that?
Oh, I think that was probably the research I did.
That's absolutely bang on.
During lockdown. Yeah.
Right on the money. 250,000.
Awesome. Lucky brilliant.
Incredible.
Didn't know about the team's points, but I do know about the employees.
Charlie, over to you for question number four.
Question number four. How old is Mahindra?
Oh, God.
I'm loving that this is making him sweat.
Yeah, I really should have thought about what this quiz might be about. I don't know. I really don't know.
We'll give you the nearest 10 years.
84 years old.
84?
Not far out.
We'll take it.
75.
Okay.
I have to say, while I'm being incredibly generous here, you are on course to go level with your boss. So
you're definitely going to beat me.
You've already completely destroyed Charlie Martin's. Don't worry about that.
You gave me really hard questions.
It was a lot harder than this. Yeah. Right. Your final question. This is the bonus question. And if you get this correct, you are top of the leaderboard with Dilbag. Here we go. Your final question. Mahindra are the world's biggest manufacturer of what?
Tractors.
Oh! Alexander Sims.
Well, I think you're very lenient there.
I have been incredibly lenient there, and I'm only doing it so you look favourable in the eyes of your new employers. But you are the now the highest rated Formula E driver we've ever had, and you are top of the pile. We've had 40-odd people on there. Charlie's miles away, somewhere down the bottom. You're up there with Dilbag.
Sorry.
You just buried me.
Yeah, completely. I know that's the highlight of your career. But while we're on career highlights, what's been your biggest moment, whether it's Formula E or in another series? What's been the standout moment in your career to date, do you think?
Oh, wow. I would probably say winning Spa 24 Hours back in 2016. That was like the first big win I'd had in car racing. I honestly didn't think that it would happen so soon in my GT career. So that was pretty huge, and it sort of changed the course of my career to then become a proper works driver with BMW, and everything that's come after that has been not purely down to that result, but it was certainly a fork in the road.
So, and to go in a different direction, what would you say, has there been a real low moment, you know, a moment when you feel like you've most kind of compromised part of your career?
Plenty of lows, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, wow. How do I pick one? I mean, honestly, that's the reality, you know, that there's one winner in each race, each championship, but... depending on the size of the grid, you know, 25, 30 people that are disappointed with not winning. So it's inevitable that you're not successful most of the time. I think my year in Formula 3, where I was teammates with Valtteri, was, although still very good, you know, I came fourth in the championship, he came third. And, you know, to an outsider, it might seem like it was still pretty decent, but I was just relentlessly outqualified by the guy by half a tenth, one tenth every single time. And that was quite difficult to deal with, to be honest.
How's that mentally? Because you obviously see that a lot in Formula One. You know, Sebastian Vettel's having a bit of a rough time, mm-hmm. you know, at the moment mm-hmm. against his teammate, and there are plenty others up and down the grid. How does that affect your mindset when you're going into a race weekend?
I mean, a lot. Inevitably, it does affect you a lot. And I don't know how one gets over it, especially when you're younger without so much experience. Inevitably, I think I've come to the conclusion you've got to start actually just not caring too much about the situation, as bizarre as it might sound. Certainly in my Formula 3 days, you know, I cared about it so much because I thought it was utterly crucial to me, or it was utterly crucial, simple as that, to me getting to Formula 1. But yeah, it just seems like everything revolves around it, you know, yeah. And when you don't out-qualify who you know you need to out-qualify, race after race after race, and after the first two, three, four races, you can come up with reasons why, and you go, right, yeah, no, we've got plenty of races to put that right and overcome it. And yeah, you get to race 9 and race 10 in the championship, and it's still the same. And it's so frustrating. So frustrating. And yeah, it gets you down, you know. It seems silly when you are, I guess now when I'm a bit older and you're faced with all sorts of other situations in life, to reflect on that and think that, well, actually being outqualified by your teammate by half a tenth of a second was the meaning of everything to me at one point. Seems a bit crazy when you now realize all sorts of other massive issues in the world. But that's your life.
Exactly. It's all relative. When that's your life and that's what's going to mean winning and losing, it is hugely important. Any hidden talents?
No. I'm very untalented, to be honest. I'm thankful that I've been able to make it as a racing driver.
Good at quizzes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think I'm even good at that. I did enough during lockdown with friends on Zoom to realise I'm not good at quizzes. But
is there anything you say you are a bit crap at until then?
Again, most things. No. I'm pretty rubbish at most things. And I'm vaguely okay at some other sports, but I mean, that's about it.
You know. what sports would they be?
Well, I quite enjoyed... I was football captain, actually.
Oh, there you go.
At prep school for the under-13 team. that was probably the other sporting highlight.
The highlight of your career.
Yeah.
do you have a racing hero?
A racing hero. When I was young, obviously looked up to Schumacher a lot. He was the guy winning at the time, but I didn't know a huge amount as to why I saw him as my hero, other than the fact that he was winning and seemed to be massively devoted to motorsport. Nowadays, I have people that I look up to and have taken a lot of advice from, but they're more, you know, directly related to who I work with and who's sort of been in GT racing and stuff for a long time. I always remember in my early days of GT racing looking up to Dirk Werner a lot. He was the BMW driver that was super experienced and was really friendly and things, but No, beyond that, I wouldn't say I've got too much of a hero nowadays.
Just on the Schumacher thing, do you think we'll see young Mick in a Formula One car in the not too distant future?
It's got to be possible, hasn't it? I mean, I don't get too involved in the world of F1 now. Well, I never was involved in it, but I followed it a lot more closely, I would guess, a few years back. I don't know. I mean, Mick's done a very good job in Formula 3. Seems like he's starting to find his feet in Formula 2 now. The kid's good, but as I've realised over the years, you know, there's a lot of good guys out there, and only a very small amount that are in the right place, right time, with the right contacts that do make it to Formula One. I would guess he's got a few things pointing in the right direction in that list. But I'm sure that if he does make it to Formula One, you know, it can't just be because of his name. You know, he's got to do the job as well. And to me, it seems like he's one of the few that are, doing the right things in junior categories.
Now, before we move on to the final three questions, which we ask of all of our guests, what's out there left for you to achieve outside of Formula E? So, you've just got a new race seat with Mahindra. Your immediate future is with them. But are there any championships that you haven't taken part in that you would particularly like to in the future, whether it be, I don't know, Extreme E or, IndyCar or something else?
I mean, there are other championships that I think appeal to me purely from a sporting point of view in terms of the competition that I watch when I watch their racing. You know, it's certainly not down to the engine side of things. I always feel a bit odd saying if I want to do like Aussie V8s or something, it's completely against in terms of what I would like to do from a sustainability point of view and a personal side of things. But purely watching the racing of Aussie V8s, that looks awesome. And I would probably say World Rallycross looks pretty mega as well. Yep. I mean, I doubt I'll ever get a chance to even sit in one of the cars, let alone do a race. But if we're throwing the pie in the sky and saying anything's possible, then yeah, probably those two.
World Rallycross is going to be going electric as well. Right.
They are in at some so, yeah. Yeah, I don't know who's going to be doing it and whether there's could at some point be any opportunity for me. We'll see. But that would be cool.
Cool.
That would be cool.
Now we have, as I said, three questions which we ask everybody. Charlie, do you want to kick off with the first one?
Sure thing. So what has got you excited at the moment?
Probably say that the thing that's most exciting for me, from a personal point of view, it's my kids. Most things revolve around them, and so just seeing how they're progressing in life is exciting every single day, to be honest. You know, whether it's a swimming lesson or taking my kids to school and seeing what they're doing. I don't want to sound really boring and mundane, but I really, really value my time at home, to be honest, and it's pretty special to me. So probably that.
That's a good answer. Do the kids realise yet when they trot off to nursery and school that they've, unbeknown to them, have the coolest dad in school because he is a racing driver in Formula E?
I don't think they do, to be honest. They obviously know that I race and they've come to watch some of the races, but whenever I show them anything related to my own racing, they just go, yeah, great, Dad. Yeah, can you show me some crashes or something? Yeah. Cool, because you're just boring. So.
Yeah.
A bit over the top of their head, I think.
Yeah, I get that. Mind you, how old is the oldest one you said was, what, five?
Five, yeah.
Five. So that he's at that age now where he could almost go karting, because Rob Smedley, who we had on a couple of weeks ago, has got his new electric karting series. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my 5-year-old down there soon to give him a little run out and see if he's got the beans to see if he can go anywhere mm-hmm. and bankrupt me in the future.
I would not even dream of taking my son karting at 5. I don't think you have a clue what's happening in the nicest possible way.
It would be complete carnage, 5-year-olds tearing around in electric go-karts. Second question for you, if not doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
Very good question. I remind myself this fairly frequently to make sure that I knuckle down and keep working hard at racing, because there isn't a single thing on the list that I'm good at outside of racing. nowadays, honestly, if racing stopped, I would probably look at something within... It goes through my mind whether I'd train as an electrician and do something involved in renewable energy and electric cars, because I have a reasonable knowledge of that just from being interested in it, to be honest. Yep. I help out with a small charity who donate electric car charging points, so I know quite a reasonable amount in terms of the installation of those. And
what's the charity
anyone
called?
Listening now? That's Zero Carbon World.
Okay, cool. We'll drop a link in the podcast description.
Oh, thank you very much. Something fairly mundane and dull compared to racing, but yeah, that's an interest of mine.
Cool. And Charlie, over to you for the final question.
Final question. What are you scared of?
What am I scared of? I mean...
Spiders?
I've got better, actually. I used to be very scared of spiders, but I think due to peer pressure from my wife, who is not scared of spiders at all, I've had to really get a grip over the last few years and come to terms that they're actually not scary at all. So I've got better with spiders. I don't know. There's no, I would say, normal thing that I'm scared of. A huge amount that comes to mind. But the biggest thing, going way onto a massively bigger scale, the impact humans are having on the world, honestly, is something that I'm reminded of pretty frequently, that I just do not know how we are going to overcome the situation quickly enough. You know, it scares me pretty frequently, actually.
Yeah, I like that answer. And you're not the first to say that. We've had one other person say that. And interestingly, that was Freddie Hunt.
Okay.
He has a big interest in sustainability and trying to make a difference to the planet. It's a fascinating subject. I do a lot of work with brands in and around motorsport and Formula E. And it's on the tip of everyone's tongue at the moment. Sustainability, becoming carbon neutral, decarbonisation, and all that good stuff. But like you say, are we doing enough? It's a huge and interesting subject.
Absolutely. And I mean, all the things that people are doing, it's great, but at the same time, you see so many habitats of animals being destroyed constantly. You know, population is expanding at a pretty crazy rate still. And at the end of the day, still money talks. Companies need to be profitable. And at the moment, you know, sustainability, as popular as it's become, I think still is not at the forefront of enough organizations' thoughts to really change things, because it does frustrate me sometimes, but I totally understand it's the way the world works. But, you know, if we wanted to change things immediately to become, all future energy to be renewable only, you know, it could happen. You know, okay, it might be a few years of difficulties, but if there was the will for governments to change the way they work, they would make it work. As we've seen with coronavirus, massive changes can happen when necessary, but still that's not happened yet on that scale that I think it needs to.
Yeah.
For the environment and the world, but
it's
going in the right direction.
Yeah, so. and it's clearly a subject that is close to your heart, and nice that you have a platform now, you know, a high profile enough platform to actually talk about it and try and make a difference in your own way. So I think that's a very, very good way to finish. It's always a good one to hear people's passion points, which, and that's clearly one of yours. But listen, congratulations on the Mahindra seat. Best of luck for season 7. Let's hope we get some fans at a racetrack and we see the back of this horrible virus. You're a very humble man, a very quick man, and let's hope you get more wins under your belt in season 7. All the best, and we'll look forward to seeing you in a paddock soon. And Charlie, thank you for stepping in at the last minute in Harry's absence to join me on the Motormouth podcast. Thank you to both of you, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much. Cheers,
guys. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _ Instagram at Motormouth _ official, and on Facebook just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app, where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.